Hi, I'm Paul Fishwick, professor of A-Tech and computer science, and I'm joined here with two of my colleagues from computer science who are also members of A-Tech, faculty in A-Tech. We have Ryan McMahon and Kang Zhang. So let me start with you, Ryan. I know you work in the area of virtual reality. You want to say something about what kind of research you do?
Sure. So, as Paul said, I'm an assistant professor in computer science and arts and technology. My research focuses on virtual reality. In particular, we focus on how we can use virtual reality to provide more effective training. So we focus on training transfer. Now, by virtual reality, I mean immersive virtual reality. So we actually use A-Tech's motion capture space to do real-time 6-degree of freedom tracking. So the user can actually walk around, and when they walk around, it's as if they're actually walking in the virtual world.
What kind of technology do you use to achieve that, to have a virtually real world or a virtual reality?
Sure. So we actually use an Oculus Rift. Unlike the standard Oculus Rift, though, ours is wireless. We've taken an HDMI transmitter receiver and put it in a backpack. So we are completely tetherless.
Okay, thanks. Kang, do you want to say something about your research and what you do?
Sure. My name is Kang Zhang. I'm a professor in computer science and also an adjunct professor at Arts and Technology. I've been working on the visual languages. That means how to actually use the graph to construct programs. And then I moved to information visualization. That means how to use the abstract images to represent a large amount of data so that people can easily intuitively understand and explore the data. And recently, I'm interested in generative art, how to use the computer to generate certain abstract paintings and also generate designs and advertisements. And logos, for example, yeah.
What kind of art could you generate? Can you give me an example?
So at the moment, I was practicing generating Kandinsky's abstract painting, mainly during the Bauhaus period. So those paintings are mostly geometrical. And also we have experimented with Jackson Pollock, and also Mondrian paintings.
Okay, thanks. What is the... It sounds like you're using kind of a flat virtual surface. Is that right? Or you're when you look at paintings or when you're generating art, is it flat or is it 3D?
We generally look at just a 2D flat. And of course, to generate this 2D images, we may treat this 2D flat images in several layers. So could be level-based images and one built on top of the other. And some other abstract paintings may compose of lots of abstract images sort of interleaving each other in the 2D space.
Okay, thanks. I guess what I'd like to sort of follow up on this difference between two dimensions and three dimensions with Ryan, and that is how do you see the difference between looking at something flat, even though it might be moving, versus a 3D experience?
Well, normally with a 3D experience, we use what's known as stereoscopy, where we actually provide a slightly different image to your left and your right eye. This allows your brain to actually fuse the two images together to provide an additional depth cue. I think that this is really the big thing that separates for a lot of people. The other attribute that I think virtual reality is a little different than what you would see from like a 3D video game is this concept of head-based rendering. So now when I physically move my head, the entire world responds as if my head is actually moving. This works for both rotations and translations, and it's a really powerful effect.
So what kind of technology is available for someone who wanted to, say, go out and buy something today for achieving that kind of virtual reality in three dimensions?
Well, for about $350, they can buy an Oculus Rift DK2 that will provide the translational tracking with the rotational tracking. This would be really good for viewing any type of 3D world that they've generated. Now, if they want to interact in that world, they could very easily combine it with a Microsoft Kinect. Or Sixth Sense is coming out with their new device called the Stim. This is the extension of the Razer Hydra. It actually allows for 6-degree of freedom tracking, but they use magnetic tracking, so it has a few flaws.
So those are mostly for the game or not for education purposes?
Mainly for gaming. A lot of these devices are very much inspired by gaming. It's just like the graphics cards, right? The reason that we have nice, high, powerful graphics cards is because people decade ago wanted to play really nice video games. So the price has come down on them. And very much like this, the technology is coming down because people want to 3D interact with their video games. But here in education, we can take advantage of this and explore the possibilities of these devices being used in other ways than just gaming.
That's great.
So one of my interests is computing education and math education. I guess I would ask each of you, is there a connection between what you do and education? Is there a connection between, or what's the relationship between education and your technology?
Because we also focus on training. Training is very similar to education. If you can train someone, you can likely educate someone. I've actually worked on a few proposals before dealing with geometry education. So the concept here is a lot of people have trouble actually visualizing the 3D surfaces and shapes that they're talking about in class. Well, let's make it a little easier for them and actually allow them to see these surfaces. And now we can give them the ability to change the functions and parameters to actually see how these surfaces will change in 3D space without struggling to mentally visualize.
So we're talking mainly about 3D functions?
Yes.
Three-dimensional geometry?
Yes, mainly 3D geometry.
Okay, Kang, how about you in terms of education? What's the connection between what you do and educating people?
Sure. In my case, it was interesting, actually. I started with Kandinsky's painting generation when I was actually learning the programming language called processing. So I tried to learn this language. Of course, I know Java, so learning processing is pretty easy. But I tried to see what kind of functions this programming language has. Then I say, okay, how about if I use this to generate something interesting? Then I look at Kandinsky's style of paintings. Then I use the processing to automatically generate certain styles and elements within his paintings. I found, oh, it's interesting. So this actually did inspire me to learn the language itself. And suppose if I started with a very dry algorithm, I may, you know, not be sort of interested and get into the language itself. Yeah, so that itself, the process itself proved the usefulness of this education.
So is the idea that if someone was interested in painting and art, that perhaps this could be a way to understand the processing language?
Yeah, exactly. Then, of course, we need to think it a little bit more systematically, say, you know, to generate these paintings, or what kind of programming language constructs you may need to use, and how to relate those constructs to the generation process itself, for example. So we can think of a more systematic approach to make it more formal, kind of educational process.
Kang, I've got a question for you. Do you think there's a controversy or any issue around the idea that some people might have in that if you're trying to reproduce Kandinsky, that they might feel that that's something that goes against the original artwork?
Yes, I do agree that there is certainly a controversy when we try to say that we can generate paintings. Instead, we actually generate the style of artists' images. We generate images that mimic the artist's original style. So instead, we are not generating the paintings with the original artist's spirit behind it. or within it, within the painting itself. So that I can see that already the artists who would not agree with this idea of generative art. But I want to say that there are some at least a business implication behind this generative technology, that we could generate the same style of images for different decorative purposes and for packaging and for generating ads and logos, for example. So those technology will certainly help in the business world.
There's an old phrase that goes something like this, that in order to understand something, you need to program it. Clearly, that phrase came from a computer scientist. But I wonder if that phrase can connect a little bit with Kandinsky. In order to understand an artist like Kandinsky, at least in part, I wonder if programming it provides that insight.
Oh, yes, I agree that I did spend a lot of time reading Kandinsky's two theoretical books. From point line to plan. The other is in the spiritual of art. I think both the theoretical books I have read try to understand how he produced those paintings. By reading this and also by programming the generation process itself, I certainly attempted to understand how those paintings were produced, and of course only to a probably very limited degree. And interestingly, when I submitted this paper to Leonardo, and one reviewer was asking a question that would this process be useful to check the authenticity of a painting? And that actually went beyond my original motive. But it's interesting. And I don't think at the current status, it's able to do it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So, Ryan, with regard to the Oculus Rift technology that you're using in virtual reality, we have in our minds something about seeing the world differently through these synthetic virtual worlds, and we're able to move our heads around as if we were moving our heads around in a virtual world. What about some of the other senses, like sense of taste, sense of smell, and maybe haptics, force feedback?
Sure. So what we do have audio. So we have wireless Bluetooth headphones that we can actually do 3D sound localization. Just recently, we've actually created an olfactory display for smell. It's very simple. We just took an Arduino Uno and we connected it to a PC slot fan and did a 3D printed casing to hold some essential oils. And now we can actually disperse the smell of the oil through the room. Currently, the display is very ambient, so once you start the display, it will basically kind of fill up the room. Our goal is to eventually get to the point where we use a more on-body situation where we have some tubing and we can actually control the flow of the smell, basically leading up to the user's nose. In terms of taste, I've seen some demos, but we're a long ways away from simulating taste. That's quite far. I would say haptics is pretty challenging. If you're talking about tactile feedback, we can do that pretty easy with vibration motors. We actually have one project where we are simulating someone touching your arm, so stroking your arm or patting your arm. We're using basically a grid of cell phone vibration motors for that, and it actually works pretty well. But when you get into things like force feedback, that's really where we start to fail. Force feedback is not really there as much as we would like it to be.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining me here.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, thank you.